It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Atamaria, Rachel. I'm good, thank you very much. Yeah, bright sunny day out there and things are going well.
It's looking good. It is looking good in the city. Let's talk. We started talking about this last week and we didn't get time to really get stuck into it, but I want to hear a wee bit more about Auckland's water strategy, which has been, announced. Various parts of it have been announced over the last wee while, but we've got more of a shape to it now. Do you want to just run us over the very basics of what the water strategy is going forward for Auckland? Because it's a big issue for us.
Yeah, it's really about setting out a plan for the next 30 years. When you're dealing with a product as important as water, it's a basic necessity of life. You need to know that you've got a proper way of dealing with it, a proper way of making sure that you can provide fresh, clean water of a high standard without the threats that might be posed by growing demand and by climate change and repeated droughts. You need to know that wastewater is properly treated and that we can end a 100-year situation where, you know, wastewater overflows into the harbour because stormwater infiltrates wastewater lines and every time it rains you get overflows. And you need to know that, you know, also related to climate change, that climate change brings more droughts, and we've seen 3 years in a row where mm-hmm. we've had really dry periods over the summer, but it also brings more floods, and we've seen a bit of that recently too. And so you need to know that your third water, your stormwater, is properly provided for. So you start off with a vision, and the vision is the life-sustaining capacity of Auckland's water. It adopts a Māori term, te Māori o te wai, which basically means that, you know, you need to put at the heart of your vision that water is life-sustaining and needs to be protected. It takes a partnership approach, both with the people of the city and with mana whenua, so that we work together to achieve our goals. And it sets out seven broad challenges, and the first one is, you know, protecting and enhancing the health of our water bodies. And we've seen over time where cities haven't done that and the damage that it does to our environment, and we want to get it right. It's about delivering the three water services that I mentioned before at the right time, the right place, the right scale as the city grows. It's about having enough water for people now and in the future. It's about reducing exposure to too much water, flooding. It's about affordability for Aucklanders. It's about how we work with our partners and how we improve the way council organises.
One of the things that has been brought up is about the sovereignty of this. Who has control over water in Auckland? And there's been a little bit of conversation about this across the whole country when we've been talking about the three waters strategy from the government. What's the Auckland Council's position on, I guess, control of water and water assets in the city?
Well, we believe very strongly, and I'm leading the charge on this, that control over water should be through elected representatives of the people, which is your council, so that people in Auckland can hold elected representatives accountable and responsible for what's being done. We don't want a situation where all these decisions are made bureaucratically by an invisible and faceless group, and I've worked really hard in the last 6 years to make sure that water care is accountable and responsive to what council and the people of Auckland want. But the Three Waters Reform, which is, you know, very much needed across the country, you've got 67 different water authorities. Yeah. You know, so our neighbour in Kaipara has 27,000 people. How does it provide its own water supply? Auckland is kind of the model for that because we cater for 1.6 million people. Mm. So what we worry about is not that the government says we need proper regulation for water quality and to make sure that people are investing enough in water. Those things are important. Not that we need amalgamation and economies of scale. That's important. But we've already got those things in Auckland, and what the government effectively does with Three Waters is takes control of 28% of the assets of this city, and it's no longer that the control of those assets is no longer in the hands of Aucklanders. It's spread over four councils and about 30 to 40 iwi and hapu, and you don't get the same accountability and you don't get the same control. So I've participated in the government's working groups in good faith, but I did a minority report to say this is what Auckland Aucklanders have told us they want, and that's what we're pushing for.
Does the water strategy that the council is currently tabling, is that addressing this at all, or is that a separate issue?
Well, the question is, if we don't control the water, how do we ensure that the water strategy is actually implemented? I think it will be implemented, because what the government has set up is a co-governance model, and I know iwi are particularly strong on ensuring the quality of water that goes into our environment, and the necessity to ensure that we have, you know, good supplies of fresh water, that we treat our wastewater, that we do things well with our stormwater. So, look, whatever the government imposes, we'll do our best to make it work in the interests of Aucklanders. But I've proposed a different model of control, and we're continuing to push for that, and we will when legislation comes before Parliament.
Okay, well, let's talk about alcohol licensing. We've seen some big changes that have been a long time in the making in Auckland. Tell us a wee bit about what's happened in the last week for alcohol licensing in the city.
Well, you know, it's not always that we can get unanimous support in council, but we got unanimous support to come behind a members bill being introduced by Auckland Central MP Chloe Swarbrick, and it basically does two things. The first is that it stops the ability of vested interests like supermarket chains from stymieing what Aucklanders have asked for from council. We've got a local alcohol policy. We've had it in place for 7 years, and we are still fighting in front of the courts to get it implemented. The supermarkets are, having lost at every stage, are now taking us to the Supreme Court. We've had to spend $1 million of ratepayers' money trying to get in place what Aucklanders want, which is stopped by vested commercial interests.
So that being said, what is actually the legislation that's being brought in that Auckland Council wants, that is so unanimously supported? What is that actually all about?
It does two things. One, it stops the appeal process by vested commercial interests, so that after 7 years we could finally implement the policies that Aucklanders have agreed on.
And you what are like, those policies like?
Well, things like restricting the off-licence hours, so that off-licences close at 9 o'clock instead of 11 o'clock. What the police tell me, what everybody else that works in the hospital system tells me, is the worst thing that happens is that people get tanked up, and then in the middle of the evening they can still go out and they can top up on further grog that they buy from the liquor stores, and that makes problems worse. Secondly, we want to be able to restrict the number of off licences. You know, you take Hunter's Corner in Papatoetoe, for example, there's 16 off licences there within 2 kilometre radius. And where do these off licences place themselves? They place themselves in our most low income and most vulnerable communities, and we want to be able to restrict that so you don't have a liquor outlet on you know, every third shop along the way. That we think that's bad. The second thing the bill does is that it puts a restriction on alcohol advertising and sponsorship, in the same way that we've restricted tobacco sponsorship and advertising, so that, you know, at the moment kids on average 4 or 5 times a day are confronted with liquor advertising, and including sports sponsorship. And obviously with sports sponsorship, you'd do what you did with tobacco. You'd replace the sponsorship by the private sector pushing a particular drug, either tobacco or alcohol, with the state saying, well, there's maybe a cent levy on sale of all alcohol, and that goes, we maintain the sponsorship we can give to our sports clubs.
So that's a really interesting change. It'll be very fascinating to see how that rolls out when we start to see that happen across the city. But I wanted to talk a wee bit, kind of segues actually into this third topic, about changes for the hospitality sector that we've seen, I guess, announced by the government last week. Changes to vaccine mandates, to pass scanning, and also to QR code scanning around. There's been a lot of very vocal parts of the hospitality sector who've been calling for changes in the alert levels. We're also hearing a lot of very thoughtful and slightly more considered conversations about how actually rolling back the rules is creating more instability for the hospitality sector, because people are perhaps less keen to go out if they don't feel like there's protections in place. What has been the experience of council in this? Have you heard much from the sector? What's the conversation from your end?
Yeah, look, I mean, it certainly has. You know, the whole COVID situation has hurt our city centre area. You know, I think across the country, you know, spending might have gone up by 2% in that sector. Across Auckland, it's probably down about 4 or 5%. But in the city centre area, it's down 45%. So our central city area has taken a hammering. But, you know, the government, let's be fair to the government. The government has worked really hard to try to get a balance between protecting business and the hospitality industry and protecting Aucklanders in particular, because we're the city that suffered most from COVID, from dying in large numbers. And you can see, even with Omicron less lethal, the impact that it's having at the moment, you know, probably on average about 11 or 12 people dying. Look, the fact is that the hospitality industry isn't being held up by government restrictions. It's being held up by the fact that most Aucklanders at the moment are pretty reluctant to go out and do things when they know that Omicron is such a factor out in the community. And, you know, life will come back. And in fact,
do you think we need to be having more conversations about how to better support the hospitality industry going forward? Because it's not going back to normal as in 2019. We all know that now, but that's going to mean massive changes for things like hospitality, for events. We all know this. Do we need to be having a better conversation about what that actually looks like from here on out?
Look, I think what will make the real difference is that we've already allowed people on working holiday visas back into New Zealand, and there's 40,000 of those a year, and a lot of them in Auckland. We're in the process of starting to allow international students back. They make a big difference in the city centre. Next week, we're opening up to visitors from Australia without any quarantine system, and in 2 weeks or 3 weeks after that, we'll be opening up to other visa waiver countries. No doubt we'll be getting cruise ships back in. All of those things will make a difference. And what will make a difference is when we come down from the peak of the Omicron surge, which is happening now.
That is true. But we have seen internationally that when you hit winter, when you hit flu season, there is a chance that we will see another rise in cases or another rise in illnesses. Do you think we need to be seeing better support for the hospitality industry to change the way that they function, but so that they are able to continue to function? What would you like to see that?
Yeah, look, I think it's important that government does work with the hospitality sector, but it's, again, you know, they've put probably in excess of $3 billion into the resurgence support payments and wage subsidies. They've put another scheme in to cater for the surge in Omicron cases. And the question is how long government can keep spending that sort of money in subsidies. And the answer is, and we're all aware of it, you can't keep doing that indefinitely. What we have to do is that we're now at the situation where we've recognised with things like Omicron variants, you can't stop it. Therefore, you've got to try to mitigate against its effects. What's worrying me, and maybe this is a parting message, there's still a million Kiwis that haven't had a booster shot. Mm. You know, I got Omicron, but I'd had the booster shot, and therefore the symptoms weren't much worse than the heavy cold. If I hadn't had that and I hadn't been vaccinated, I could have been one of those peak 1,000 hospitalisations that was occurring at the time. And what we need to do is say, OK, this is affecting the world now. There are possibilities of worse, you know, Frankenstein strains of Omicron and Deltacron, I think they're calling it. This isn't going to go away. Therefore, we've got to look at how we can maximise safety but still allow society to function and the economy to function. And that's our challenge ahead of us.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning. Mayor Phil Goff, have a fantastic rest of your day and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks very much, Rachel. Always good.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank